Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 128 with the title, The Future of Gender Equity. And I have the absolute honour and privilege to welcome Valentina Jaramillo. Valentina is an empowerment catalyst and an inclusion advocate, a communications expert, and dedicated diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging practitioner with a passion for creating safe spaces where everyone can bring their true selves and develop their full potential. When I asked Valentina to describe their inspiration and superpower, they said that their superpower is their honesty and using it to share their lived experience without judging. They would also say they are a good listener, creating a safe space for people to talk to them. Hello, Valentina. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Joe. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I am as well. It's great to chat to you in the green room and find out that I'd also been to several of the places you've lived in the US. So, yeah, it's quite fascinating. So, Valentina, the future of gender equity. Tell me more about that.
Yes, the future of gender equity definitely goes beyond the binary. And that means that it's not about just empowering women, but actually having all genders represented. So I think the future of gender equity is that when we hear those two words, gender equity, we don't necessarily hear women and men, but we understand that gender goes more than that binary, that there are gender non-conforming, gender non-binary, agender, that there is different expressions and identity of gender. So that's what we want to do, use all these lived experiences and empower them to have diverse perspectives and be the workplace, be a place where everybody can thrive. So I think this is where the future of gender equity.
Brilliant. Some of my listeners probably are unsure around gender diversity when we come to non-binary identities or agender, because agender and non-binary is often an umbrella term. It encompasses a whole load of different identities as well, doesn't it? So could you explain a little bit more about what it means to you, maybe?
Yes, totally. I will first go a little one step back and let's explain that gender identity, gender expression, and sex assigned at birth are three different things. So gender identity is the way we see ourselves. Gender expression is the way we show up to the world, the way, and this includes the way we dress, the way we talk, and many different things. And sex assigned at birth is the sex that when we were born and they saw our genitals, the doctor said, this is a boy or this is a girl. And this is what commonly we see as gender, but it is not. So it is different. And then when we talk about gender diverse, people are people who don't necessarily subscribe, or what it means to me, right, to necessarily subscribe to this sex assigned at birth as the only information regarding gender identity, right? So non-binary, yes. And they also fall, from my understanding, right, or the way I see it, under the transgender umbrella, which is basically not identifying with the gender you were assigned at birth. And between in the transgender umbrella, we have people who transition or people who don't necessarily transition, whether clinically or just socially, right? And then there's people who definitely do not conform to any of those known, let's say, categories, right? So myself, I identify as gender nonconforming. When there's a form and the only option is non-binary, I will probably choose non-binary. However, the words nonconforming resonate more just because I don't want to conform to any of those norms, right? Any of those like societal norms that have been described, oh, you are a woman, so you have to be this, or you are a man, so you have to be that, whether it's the way you look or even it has been taken even to characteristics. So they usually being more compassionate or more sensitive is feminine, and being assertive and direct is masculine. And I don't agree with that. Like, people can be any sort of things, and it doesn't have to be directly related to their gender.
I get it. I understand it. In fact, I don't understand, because it's not me. And I often say this to people, that I don't have to understand you. I just have to listen to you and understand that you know who you are. And that's all that matters. I don't have to understand what being gender nonconforming is, what being non-binary means, what being agender means. I don't need to understand. I just need to understand that you understand what it means to you. So I haven't got to go any deeper than that. I just go, great, fine, fantastic, happy to meet you. Because a lot of people really want to try and, they want to try and get it, don't they? They want to try and analyze it. It's not something you can analyze, really, is it?
And it's just trusting people's experience, right? I think you said it correctly. When someone, why would you want to deny me my identity, right? Like, this is how I see the world and how I see myself in this world. So when we meet someone and they tell us they're agender, for example, which particularly means they don't believe in gender at all, not as any sort of construction or anything, and that's their experience, and they want to use their name as their pronouns, or they don't want to be referred as one or the other, or maybe they don't care how they are referred as because it's a personal experience. We have no right on saying, no, sorry, you're wrong. You have to choose either belong on this box or that box, or maybe these other two that we kind of made up. But you have to choose one. And it's like, well, no, I don't necessarily want to choose. And as you said, it's about respecting people, trusting them what they tell you, and believing them. So if we want to bring it back to the gender equity in the future, I think it's just about this, right? Realizing that people have different perspectives, different identities, different experiences of life. And this is what enriches them. And it's going to bring and a lot of good information or good ideas and good ways of thinking, different ways of thinking, to the workplace. And this will end up being better for the workplace, because we already know by now that diverse identities in the workplace bring, they increase profit, they retain talent, they increase productivity. So we already know all the benefits, right? It's about just allowing ourselves to really include everyone, and not just like, oh, because when men lead, they lead this way. Or when women lead, they lead this way. It's like, okay, no, everyone has their own experience and they're going to lead the best way they can. So let's just encourage them to have that journey. It doesn't have to be related because you're a woman, then your characteristics to lead are sensitive, compassionate, soft, right? Why, right? Any woman can lead anywhere, and it's just the way they truly feel it, right? So I think by expanding our vision of gender to that of a spectrum and not just A or B or male or female, we just allow more diverse perspectives and lived experiences for people to choose from, and just bring more ideas and everything, like all the selves to work so that they can actually thrive.
Do you find it, when you're working with organizations, companies, and they're talking about gender equity, a lot of it is focused around female empowerment. Do you feel lost in that language then? Because no one is trying to separate gender beyond the binary. And that's the challenge, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I think it's a big challenge. So I think the improvement that has been done on women empowerment is amazing, for sure. I I'm glad it's happening. And I think if we just keep focusing on that, which is what's happening in a lot of places, is the data they're collecting, is the, when you talk about pay equity, you see the results against women versus men. There's still no even data on gender non-conforming or non-binary or other genders out there, right? So like with everything, when we focus on just one, we're leaving the other ones behind. If we are able to broaden our perspectives and empower all gender minorities or all of them, women are going to benefit. It's not that because we bring the other ones up, then suddenly women start losing all what they fought, right? Like that's just impossible. They're going to keep getting more empowered, more opportunities, equal pay and everything, which my question, because this is what happens when you see the work that companies are doing, the work that many international organizations are doing, focuses on women empowerment, is super valuable. Like, don't get me wrong, I really appreciate that this work is happening. But then what's going to happen in 2020, in 2040 or 50 years from here, we're going to turn around and look like, oh, there's a big disparity between men, women, and the rest of the population, right? And it's like, again, big mistake, right? We should be putting everyone up, trying to get to that equity for everyone. And that's where I see the issue, that it's not, that conversation is still not happening.
How do we change the language that we use to be inclusive of your own identity whilst also recognizing the work that's going on around in female empowerment, female mentoring schemes that exclude you by the very title of that name? How does an organization include you and your identity in their programs? Because when someone is a sex assigned at birth female, assigned gender at birth female, there's still some legacy challenges that people will face because of their assignment at birth that they don't escape later in life by either transitioning or becoming gender agnostic or gender non-conforming. So you still have some legacy traits that you need empowerment with. So how do we make the language inclusive to recognize what you need as well?
That's a good question. And I think it's also a tricky one because I'm not sure if it's just about the language, right? So one of the things that I know that happens in a lot of corporate or that started to happen is that the ERGs, the women ERG, was suddenly kind of they put all the other genders in there. But it was kind of like, oh, we don't know what to do with you, so let's just tie them up here, right? And maybe that was not the strategic thing to do. Or if you're going to do it, or maybe it was, but do it consciously, right? And again, bearing in mind that there are things in which they can support each other and like fight together, or not fight, but like work to promote better together, whether they're, and there are also things that, okay, these are very specific to women. And these are very specific to gender non-conforming people or non-binary people, right? So they can work in some things together or not. But therefore, to the point of the language, I don't know if it's about we just need to call them all gender minorities, or because then we have the women who are like, okay, but we've been fighting this for so long. I was born female and I identified female for a very long time because I didn't know better. I always felt like, oh, this is not where I feel, but I didn't know I had a choice, right? So I understand, I've been there. Like you said, yes, there are some struggles just by the fact of who we are born as female, and if we continue to identify as that, and if not, it's not like suddenly, oh, the things that used to happen just moved over and I don't experience them anymore, right? Then they never disappeared. And I think if we get too concern on the language, then we start to lose focus of the real world, of the real work that we have to do, right? So I don't think everyone will ever agree, because if we all call it gender, we start to talk about gender minorities, let's say, there's probably going to be a lot of women who are not happy about that and about all the work they've done, and which we know already happens, right? We know that there's those discussions already happening. And we don't want that. Like, the idea is not, hey, I'm not here to fight you. I really appreciate all the advancement and things that have happened for women, because we needed them. And it's incredible that they haven't happened before. And it's 2024 and we still see that pay gap, and we still see not as many women in the leadership roles. Like, so all good with that. And let's don't forget about the rest. Let's just see how we can bring them together with our action. Like, we are all want each other to thrive, right? So if we start making more wars within the gender world, I think we end up nowhere. Not sure if that answered the question. But
No, it does. It does. I was talking to a trans masculine friend of mine the other day, and he was saying how he's noticed an acquisition of privilege, losing people who no longer perceive him or read him as female. And now he's recognized that he's gained privilege around a voice in a meeting, being listened to, being heard, feeling safer on the streets, being treated in a kind of that bro culture that sort of be called mate and included in the male grouping. In fact, so much so that he recognized that women now perceive him as a potential threat. So he has really acknowledged the difference of how men and women are perceived in society. Have you seen something similar from your lens, if you like, from outside of the gender bullshit, if you like?
Yes, I have to say, and it's sad because it's realizations I've had recently that okay, as a perceived white, I am from Colombia, I don't see myself as white, but I understand I am perceived as white, and I lived as a cisgender woman for many years. I still had some more privileges that I completely lost when I came out as gender nonconforming. And some were very easy to notice, just the fact that, for example, people don't see me as gender nonconforming. They have what they have in their mind, and having people completely ignore when I say, yes, I'm gender nonconforming, my pronouns are they, them, and they keep she, and it's like, no, I'm not she. Like, can you respect me? Oh, but they is plural. And I'm like, yeah, no, they is not plural, you know? Like, and all these things. Oh, but you make it so hard. And he's like, take a deep breath. It's not about you. You know, it's about me, but I'm so sorry I made it hard for you. So definitely, and lately, some of those privileges that I've noticed. So I have my CV, my resume, and I include my pronouns in my resume. And I've applied for a couple of roles, and I haven't gotten any responses. And I've read articles about that it has been proven how people who include their pronouns, and it's they, them pronouns, on their resumes don't get as many callbacks. And I'm living it. And I'm like, seriously? Like, this is reality? This is the world we live in? It makes me wonder, that's why, for example, doing stuff out in the world, putting out information, getting new clients, it just makes everything harder. Because people are like, yeah, this I don't understand, so I don't relate, so I'll just go to what I know and I feel safe with, right? This person challenges my norm, like my conceived way of seeing the world. Like, thank you, but I'd rather go back to what I know and I feel safe with. So yes, definitely. I do think that definitely happens.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying about the, it's too difficult for people. It's like, oh, come on. It's like, can you make it easy for me? It's like, well, hang on a minute. It's not for me to make it easy. And it does challenge people, because people are so ingrained into their way of speaking, their way of thinking, that it's sometimes hard to nudge people into a different orbit to think differently, because it's too much effort. And yeah. And I think it frustrates me that we're in 2024. We've been talking about this for generations and centuries, and yet we're still ingrained. And people want to put you back in the box, don't they? They want to make their assumption, and they want to tell you that they're right, and not listen to you, and then treat you differently because you use those pronouns. And I've actually heard recruiters. I go to a lot of recruitment conferences and I speak to a lot of recruiters. And there's lots of anecdotes and stories out there how some hiring managers, some recruiters will see pronouns on your LinkedIn profile. And I've actually had people say, well, if I see pronouns on someone's LinkedIn profile, their CV goes straight in the bin. And it's not just about they, them. It's any pronouns on a profile. It's far too woke for them to handle. So they just, I don't want that person in my organization, and throw it out the window. And that's the new, you know, we saw that with racist type remarks where people were looking at your photograph and saying, well, that's not a white person, or that's not a woman, or that's not a man, or something, and then rejecting you from your photograph. Now they're rejecting you for your pronoun.
Yeah, no, it's quite sad that it's, as you said, 2024, and these things are happening. And I guess that's why we are here, and that's why we continue to do the work. Like, it's not that hard, right? And when you actually see people getting it, and that they are able to get past their own head and limitation, and suddenly understand, like, hey, but that is not about me. It's actually about this person. So it's okay. I can call them whatever they want, right? Or I can just respect them. And it's fine. They are respectful with me. And then you see a change. So again, if I think in the workplace, we're missing that conversation still, you know. There's not that many places yet, especially, I would say, more typically male-driven industries, that like oil, I don't know, cars, automobile, things like that, that I have been usually more or have been running for a long time and everything, it's still too narrow-minded. And they're struggling to get women parity there, but they're forgetting about the rest of us. And one day they're going to just turn around and see, like, oh, oops, again, we have to go back to zero with the gender equity. So the idea would be to start having those conversations now, at least gathering the data, right? At least at a minimum, like, okay, this is the data. These are the pay differences. This is the amount of people we have in the workplace. These are not, you know? So at least from there, especially because the generations that are coming are more gender diverse. You know, there's more queer people, queer in gender, queer in their sexuality. So it's just like, they have to catch up. Organizations will need to catch up before it's too late.
Do you find sometimes that you have to put yourself back in the box for situations where you're traveling, you're doing something, and it's just too difficult to push on with who you are, and you end up conforming to someone else's rule set because you kind of have to? Do you find that often?
Yes, and it's sad and it's hard. And I last year we were traveling in Southeast Asia, and for the whole year with my wife, and we met a lot of people. And definitely there were places in which we were hanging out with Westerners, right? People who were supposedly educated, digital nomads, all these things, no clue or understanding, or even the desire to understand what their gender nonconforming was or is, and that they could use they, them pronouns. And it was like, okay, but is this? They're like, oh, yeah, she, and like, I'm not she, they. Completely oblivious, and I don't want to change, and I don't want to make an effort, and whatever. And there was a moment, there were places in which we weren't staying for long. So there was a moment in which, like, you know what, this fighting is not even worth it. It's not worth it. I was very lucky that I have my wife, and she was doing the fighting most of the time. She was like, they go by them, and explaining the differences. And she's an amazing person in the way she explains it and has all the patience and all the love and does it. And at some point, she came to me and she told me, I cannot do it anymore. And I was like, well, believe me, that happened to me too. You don't have to, you know, do it when you feel like it and when you feel resourced. But it's a fight that we cannot keep going. And back in the U.S., where you would think, like, again, many of us think, oh, we're, however you want to call it, in a developed country or something. And again, very many circumstances, I find myself quickly just deciding, you know what, I'm not going to give it this fight. And I try, especially if it's short, quick and fast conversations, I try to just, yeah, whatever, I'm not going to fight you. But it's the importance of, like, inclusive language. Companies, restaurants, I go to a restaurant with my wife and everyone's ladies, and it's like they should train their people to say good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, you know. Like, there's so many ways to call people without gendering them, and we should be doing much better on that, and still not happening. So yes, that happens a lot, many situations. And what I do is, I, how much energy I have and how long to give the explanation, to try the other person to understand, make them understand. how long is the interaction going to be, and if it's going to be more meaningful and it has a possibility of a relationship, a friendship or something, then it's like, okay, I'm going to take my time and I'll try it for X amount. If at a certain point they just don't get it, it's like, thank you, but I don't want to be your friend, right? Continue this relation. And where they're very short interactions, it's like, okay, whatever, just assume the box, smile, because whatever.
Yeah, I'm pretty determined to correct everybody that gets it wrong. I mean, it happens enough for it to be annoying. And as you say, my wife, she's a fierce defender, and she'll growl at people and she'll fight back. And so, yeah, it's sometimes nice to say, you deal with this one. I'm just going to go and sit down. It's over to you. But yeah, I guess as a trans woman, a binary trans person, where it's easy for someone, it's easy for me to say, actually, it's madam, or actually, it's not sir, or it's not this, it's not, and I can lock them onto a female gender. It's much easier I imagine it's much easier for me than it is for you to say, actually, no, it's not she, it's they. And they go, what? And there's a, must be a real kind of, they just look blank at you, I'm sure.
Yes, and I think it shouldn't happen to you either.
No. I know.
But it does. Yeah, I know, but it's like, yeah, well, so I think even if we use inclusive language, that people would avoid those circumstances, right? Mm. Because if we just generalize for everyone, like we avoid making more people uncomfortable, right? So, or hurting people, because it actually hurts. That is the reality.
It is. And every time it's often I find it when I'm commuting by train and you're standing on the platform and they announce the train, or they say, ladies and gentlemen, the train now arriving, or ladies and gentlemen, this, ladies and gentlemen, that. We're so ingrained, certainly in British culture, I'm sure many English speaking countries, there's this ingrained politeness of having to say ladies and gentlemen or sir, madam, where actually, as you said, you can just put a full stop. Earlier, hello, full stop, or good morning, full stop. You don't actually have to continue the sentence on with sir, madam, or anything else. You can just say, how are you? But people are so ingrained with the language, aren't they? That's the challenge. It's getting people to step back and think, I can move the full stop. Is that easy?
Yes. Well, language is a big thing. And I think what people seem to forget is that languages evolve the same as culture, right? Google and Googling was a word that didn't exist, and it's now used and we all understand what it means, you know? So there's a lot of words that, many words that just came appearing as things were made and appeared. And it's, by this, I don't mean that we just appear, right? But we are starting to name us and be present and be here so people can get used to different things. It's not like, oh no, sorry. And so that language is a very particular thing. I am from Colombia. I was born in Colombia and we speak Spanish, and it's even more complicated because it's a gendered language. And so the struggle is even harder, because when you ask, the ask is for people to use something that is completely new, which is using not A or O as they're used to, but using an E or maybe even an X, right? And people are having heart attacks and like, oh my gosh, what's going on? What are you doing, ruining our language? And it's like, not necessarily. I had the pleasure of reading an article this weekend that my mom sent me from Colombia, in which the actual director of a writing maestry from the Instituto José Cuervo, which is the language institute in Colombia, he is actually explaining why their course and why their institute is advocating for inclusive language in Spanish, where there is an X instead of A or O or an E. And it's just because language evolves and it changes. And the more we can open it up, the more inclusive we're going to be and the more open we are to life and to people's experiences. So it was kind of like, oh, okay. A little of love came through that article. But yeah, it's just about wanting to change and about, I sometimes like, why is it so hard for people? Because the only thing I'm asking them, like, I'm a person and I want respect the same as you do and the same as they do, right? So it's just like, okay, you want to be called, if you want to be called, or if your name is, whatever, my name is Valentina, and people come and call me Joseph, well, no, my name is Valentina. What can I do? You know, please call me Valentina. So it's kind of the same thing, right? Like, it's just respect for each other and seeing each other for who we are and just letting us be without, especially if we're not harming anyone, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to someone the other day, I think, and they were saying that English is a really difficult to language to learn if you're learning it as a second language or third language. It's really complicated given all the rules and all the lack of rules sometimes, or the duplicate words and spellings. But it must be really hard as a person who is gender non-conforming, living in a gendered language world. You know, you mentioned the, and I'm not sure if this is Spanish or Portuguese, but it's obrigada, obrigado, depending on if it's male or female. And every verb and noun is kind of gendered, and you have to change the ending, as you said, O or A. I was talking to someone in Poland, and the Polish language also has constructs like that. And even what you can call yourself has to come off a list the government provides. You can change your name, and it has to end in an A if you're female, or not an A. I think it's an A or I can't remember what it is if you're a male. But there is no kind of rule set around non-binary or gender non-conforming, because you has to be on this list or this list.
Yeah. And Polish, so my wife is Polish. That's a coincidence.
Okay.
So they have, but they at least have a neuter, like a neutral term. So which they use for things, which is not a good example, but at least they're used to, right? Either for babies, it's the neutral. And again, yeah, the nouns and everything gets gender. But at least it's a concept that exists. They kind of understand that neutral term. In Spanish, obrigado is Portuguese, but it's the same. Portuguese, French, they're all gender language. And you have to, there is not that possibility, right? So people are like, well, no, that just doesn't exist. Or it sounds funny. Or yeah, it sounds funny because it's a new word. I guess I'm thinking a cellular phone probably sounded funny at the beginning when we just started using them. And now cell phone is super common and everyone knows what a cell phone is. And no one would even think about questioning why was it called cellular, you know?
So it's quite easy in English to write a gender neutral email or statement. I mean, the intro I read out today is gender, has they, them, their pronouns throughout it. If you were to write that in Spanish or another gendered language, how could you do that? Would that work?
So that's the struggle, right? Because in English, yes, has genders in the sense that it has she and he and in the pronouns. But if it's a pretty boy or a pretty girl, pretty is still the same, right? In Spanish, If you wanted to say and let's put another example, height, right? A tall girl or a tall boy, it's tall, right? In Spanish, it's una niña alta or un niño alto. And for gender non-conforming, un niñe, they want to put an E, or we would put an E, alte. But it's something that until recently has not been used. It is trying to be more and more and more and more installed. And depending, again, I one of the reasons I have a hard time going back to my country is because of the language and because the people that surround me there, not necessarily the most woke people, and I have to change it. However, I do have a group of friends that are very woke and they do their effort and they do it, and by now they're used to. My wife is fluent in Spanish, and maybe just because it's not her first language or whatever, but she never gets it wrong. She always uses constantly. She even corrects me if I make a mistake, right? So again, I make mistakes too. So it's not about that. It's about the intent of wanting to try something different. And the excuse is like, oh, that's just crazy. That doesn't exist, that's not grammatically correct or anything. And again, language evolves. It doesn't mean it cannot change. These things were not talked about before. And that's why I had a hard time growing up in Colombia, because this was not a possibility. You know, when I was born, they told my parents, this is a girl and this is a package of the way I was supposed to be just because I was assigned girl when I was born, right? And it never felt right. It never did. And neither did men, boy, right? But I never knew there was this, I can be just anything and it doesn't really matter. I don't have to be this or that and prescribed as this or that. And my own experience, at some point I thought, oh, okay, I'll conform to being a woman, but in my own terms. And I that kind of did it for a while until the day I was able to find out, like, it doesn't matter how old I am. This is who I am. I felt seriously out of a box. And it was the happiest day of my life. Just like, oh, I don't have to conform. It's their problem. And I was 40 years old and who cares? This is the moment I'm free, you know, like I'm actually out of a cage. And if you cannot handle it, so sorry, right? And this has been a journey to get to this point of not apologizing for being who I am, right? Of not, but actually just being myself.
When you were saying there that you misgender yourself, get it wrong yourself, I was laughing on the inside because I often misgender myself. And it's, you know, you live for 40, 50, 60 years of your life with a certain phraseology and rule book in your head, which is why I'm very tolerant of others because I'm not perfect with me. And also, like your wife, my wife is probably more accurate than I am. She gets it right all the time. And we sometimes joke about it. I go, oh. But it doesn't make you less valid. The fact you get it wrong yourself doesn't make you less valid. I've heard people saying, well, you're not really a woman then if you keep getting it wrong. I went, I am. It's just, it's linguistic somersaults. You can't, our brains aren't always able to pivot on this stuff. And which is why I completely understand people who struggle, because I struggle sometimes. Not often, but often enough.
Yeah, I think it's about making the effort. I think that's what the key, and that's what I try to teach people. But I think that's what the other hard part. We and corporate world and everything, it wants to be so perfect and people want to just get it right every time and everything, that they rather not do anything, right? So you know what, this is too hard. I'm not even gonna try. Because what if I make a mistake? What if I hurt this person? What if I get it wrong and I misgender them? And it's like, no, what I try to tell people, particularly with me, I just want to see that you care and that you try, not that you decide to choose what my identity is, right? Like if you we're talking and then you, by mistake, say she, whatever, turn they and move on, nothing happens, right? We all make mistakes. Even I make mistakes when I talk about me in Spanish, and like it happens. So it's not about that, but it's about the intent, about people like, okay, I see you, I respect you, and I'm going to do my best to try, right? And we know that there are lots of ways for people to get better with pronouns, like practicing what with my wife a long, long time ago before even I transitioned, we would just name gender things at our house just to get used to using the different genders, right? And just they, and we would just practice, and then you start getting it into your head. So it's about that, but it's the intent. And I think this is kind of the idea with gender equity. We can make mistakes still, but let's all go to allow everyone to thrive. And yeah, okay, you made a mistake, you learned the lesson, you're trying, let's go to the next, you know. Let's start to talk, to have these conversations. Let's stop being afraid. Like, we exist and we are part of the corporate world too. And we want to work and we want to have an impact. So just invite me to the conversation, right? Invite us to the conversation.
I think one of the trickiest things my wife and I, and also my family, I suppose, had to deal with was how to refer to me within the family. So we got married 37 years ago. So we were married a long time and I was always a husband. So when I transitioned, we started, we got to a point where she couldn't refer to me as husband because it just looked ridiculous. We were in a shop or something. Oh, and my husband's, she just found it awkward herself. She just couldn't do it. So then we started using, or she started using the word partner. And then she found that didn't reflect how she saw me, because partner often is associated with being not married. So she wanted to reinforce the fact she was married. So she now uses wife purely because it describes that we're married, and she feels quite safe for that. My mum calls me her daughter, which is quite good, but our two children call me dad because it's fine with me. It doesn't actually bother me that much. And if it makes them happy and our relationship is strong, really does it matter? So, yeah, it's a really crazy environment where my wife's using she, her pronouns. Our daughter's using the odd he, him, and dad. And it's kind of this whole mix of stuff going on. And you just have to go, it doesn't matter sometimes, does it?
No, it doesn't matter. I think that would be the idea, right? To get to these places where it doesn't matter. And that at work it doesn't matter and we can all just be. But unfortunately, I don't think that's where we are, because I still think, well, there's a lot of hate out there for people like us, right? There's a lot of unconscious bias that people, if you have a CV that has your pronouns, whatever they are, I'm just going to throw it away. If I see it on LinkedIn, you're also not valid into my part. You know, like all these things. So until we don't finish, like, or don't do the work, unfortunately, I think it will still matter. So it's this tricky how to get to that balance in where it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the work you're doing with organizations then in promoting gender equity, and also the DEIB consultancy you're doing with organizations. So what sort of are the priorities you're working on at the moment?
I work definitely on helping them get their gender equity strategies and to be inclusive in that gender equity strategy. With many, what we are starting to do is just have that conversation and to start gathering the data, right? Because many of the, I've been working mostly with nonprofits, and they're not huge nonprofits, but between medium or small nonprofits, and they don't have a lot of this data on their own. Many don't even have gender nonconforming employees, but they do support gender nonconforming people, or gender nonconforming people come to like part of the people they help or work with, and therefore they just need to be aware and know all these things. So gathering the data, making sure that they are using inclusive policies, that people use inclusive language for everyone, that trying to start to build, even in these small spaces, that ground start, right? So that when it keeps advancing, and they end up hiring someone that is gender nonconforming, that person's going to be happy and actually have no issues entering the workplace because it's been set up for them, right? It's been an easy transition. And also, at the same time, making sure that they have and they're complying and getting better even with their women gender equity, right? Like with their women in power and all these things that we know. And I try to advocate, and this is because a personal experience, a lot for gender neutral restrooms. It is a simple thing, but it is also not a simple thing. So just making sure if there's ways in which these organizations can implement those, especially the ones that have like these facilities available for their customers or the people they support. So just having these options. I think what I've mostly worked with is the policies, making sure that all the language is inclusive, that they have policies to cover all the spectrum, and that they don't, you know, like pregnancy, it's covered for everyone, you know, like these kind of things, that they don't say women health, but like reproductive health, things like that, because not only women can get pregnant, right? So that they, all these sort of things are inclusive, and the strategy. And again, the collecting of the data, because there is not a lot of data currently.
Do you find that changing the language like that alienates women who have a traditionalist view, and they can get quite angry around rewriting traditionally female terms like pregnancy and childbirth and motherhood and birthing, and all the language around menopause as well? It's very traditionally female gendered, and then when we start to rewrite that language, I've experienced many women getting disenfranchised and getting angry by trying to erase their femininity. How do you kind of get around that?
Well, I think unfortunately this is part of the oppressive systems, by showing that if they remove the word that that women, let's say that women are only women, and that what gives them the power is that they are the, it's women health, and this is their thing, and this is their status, but this is the part of the oppressive system. If you are not this, then you don't exist. And it's like, no, you are equally feminine, and you've got to your power, and you still do, just realize that it is a reproductive health, because it can be other people whose gender is not a women, right? And I think it's kind of a hard one, because it does happen, and it is also sad that it happens, because that's not the purpose, right? Like the purpose when we advocate for using lactating rooms instead of the maternity room at work, it doesn't mean that we don't want women there or anything like that, right? It's just like, let's broaden our minds. However, oppressive systems wants us to believe that. And again, I do believe that the patriarchy and the oppressive system wants us to keep fighting, because if they make us fight against each other, they hold the power, right? Whether we unite and we are all like, yeah, it's reproductive health and lactating rooms and all these words, and we just try to change language to be more inclusive, they're gonna start losing and losing and losing their power, and I'm not sure they can handle it. So I think it's about that.
Yeah, I agree, but I do see or hear lots of people getting worried about the erasure of what it means to be a woman, and a lot of the vociferous anti-trans rhetoric is often directed at trans women for being seen as invaders into female spaces, as being threats. And it's this is concerted voice of anti-transness, if you like, around trying to protect what it means to be a woman. And that's part of the challenge, isn't it? And when we're trying to take gender out of the equation, there are people trying to force it back in.
But I would ask those people, because I think when, I don't know how many people have really asked, what does it mean to be a woman? And get an answer that is, you know, or a man for that matter, right? And it ends up being a social construct, right? Like if you really go through the work, it's a social construct. And you can choose to, this is how I identify, and it's fine, and it's beautiful and everything. But to people who are using it, in this case, women who are using this rhetoric against trans women, it's like, seriously? Like what part of your femininity is being aggravated because of a trans woman? I understand that there's a big rhetoric around the bathrooms. That's why I say it's a simple one, but it's not so simple, because of the danger the women are in. And it's like, what are you talking about? Like, seriously? I forgot his name. The comedian, South African comedian, Trevor Noah. He has a great sketch in which he talks about, like, seriously, are people just waiting out there for the bathroom to see who goes in? Like, it's not going to happen, right? And what actually happens is that there's a lot of transgender women being hit, tortured, aggravated, etc., for having to use a bathroom that does not align with the sex that they choose, right? So I think it's the opposite. And I know this rhetoric exists, but my invitation to these people would be just like, what part of the femininity is attached to a transgender femininity? The relationship, for me, I don't see it. So I would invite people to just really try and see why would they affect it more or not. And the same with using reproductive health and menstrual products, you know, I think that when we do better for a specific group, we do better for all, right? When one of the unrepresented groups, we do better for everyone.
But yeah, we've seen loads of studies out there around the pink tax. Your female products generally are more expensive per ounce, aren't they? You know, if you want to buy women's shaving foam, it's the same shaving foam as men's shaving foam. It's still got aloe vera in it. It's still got the same stuff. It's just got a pink label on the outside. It costs more. Pink razor blades, pink anything. It's more expensive proportion. So it's a marketing thing. But yeah, you talk about social constructs. It's also a marketing construct, isn't it? That we're trying to sell to specific people with a brand, with a kind of visual representation. And the world's kind of geared up around that kind of that binary product.
Yeah, it's sad. And again, systems of oppression, capitalism is one of those, right? And it's about, we want to sell more, we want more money. Who cares about your liberty and your right to be? This is what money is, what rules. And I think this is part of the things we need to change and take into account, right? Hey, you can sell whatever you want for whatever price you want, still respect people, right? And I'm probably sure that they can come up with a lot of other marketing ways to charge us more for products. It's just going to take creativity. So maybe they should embrace diversity, because it sparks creativity and they will find other ways to market us, not based on that construct.
Talk about marketing there. You know, we're smack bang in the middle of Pride season, you know, that rainbows everywhere, people celebrating their love. But it's kind of, a lot of it's pinkwashing, a lot of it is performative. So how do you call it out? How do you work with organizations to make them a little bit more authentic around their advocacy, if you like?
I think that the key thing is that Pride shouldn't be, and we've seen it and we've said it a lot, but Pride shouldn't be just about June or whatever month, because, for example, here in Atlanta, it's in October, but what, you know, like, it shouldn't be around June or about that particular month. So I believe that companies who are doing the right thing are doing it all through the year, not just changing their logos the 1st of June. And then changing them back, right? That you actually know these companies are walking their walk all the time, constantly. You see them advocating for their employees. You see posts on LinkedIn. You see their people. You see them hire different diversity. You see that the people who work at this company have their pronouns on LinkedIn. You see that they are doing courses, they're trying to learn. These people are definitely wanting a change also, right? And these companies want that. And I think that this year, it was clear that many people, it was rainbow washing, and it is still, because many companies dropped their support. And we were able to see, I don't know what your thought is, but I think that even on LinkedIn, there's less and less companies who just changed their logo to Pride logo. I'm surprised. I go watching their accounts and everything, and I haven't seen as many as, like, let's say 2 years ago, everyone who had the Pride flag on their logos, right? So it's about, we end up knowing, right, who just puts out a product on Pride. And then you never see them the rest of the time, right? Or you never, right? Like, what's that? You look at their board and everyone is white, cis, men. No one puts their pronouns on their LinkedIn profiles or anywhere in their websites. So I think by now we can start to notice and really see those companies. And if they haven't figured it out, they will probably start to see it in their revenue also, and in the way they attract people and talent and retain their talent. Because, and again, every generation is becoming even more queer, right? Like Gen Z, it's more queer. I don't know what, it's like 3 out of 5 or something, they consider themselves queer. So it's going to have to stop the rainbow washing, right? We want to see the real thing and real action, and that you are committed. And another thing, I think, which is important, and I know it's happening in the UK and here in the US also, there's a lot of backlash politically right now for the community. And I think companies who have power, because they do, and here in the US, companies are allowed to lobby, they should be lobbying for trans and LGBTQ rights, and not just for how to sell more, you know, but they should actually be lobbying for our rights.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's, I'm quite charitable when it comes to companies changing their logos, because for me, it communicates in two directions. One is to the outside world, to the public, to their customers, to part of a marketing brand, but also communicates internally. So I'm thinking about their queer staff, their trans staff, their non-binary staff, looking up and seeing their company has taken the initiative to change their logo. so that they feel seen and heard and amplified internally. So I'm quite charitable that organisations that do it at the bequest, if you like, of their staff network, the ERG, their pride network, I think it's a good thing because it shows that they're being heard and listened to and being amplified. It's ones that do it where they're literally trying to sell product off the back of it. But I think if it's authentic and representative of their staff, I think that's a good motivation. And I also recognise that it takes a lot of people to change a logo on a company. Marketing, sign-off, communications, yeah. Legal. Just think about the number of people that have to get involved to change a company's logo. And I think for them to have done that, if they're a big global organisation, they must have put some effort into it internally. So I respect the effort it takes, provided, as you say, there's some authenticity about that. It's not just for June, not just for July. It's 365. And but I do have a lot of empathy for what organisations are trying to do. I'd rather they did that and showed allyship to their staff than not do it at all or say to their staff, no, we can't do that. So, yeah, it's trying to balance it out, isn't it?
Yeah, and I agree that it has to be authentic. But I think employees inside know, I think precisely it's them who know whether that company was authentic or not. Because if I work for a company, I'm an LGBTQIA identified person, and I work for a company that suddenly changes their logo to Pride, to the rainbow logo, right? But I don't see anyone represented. I actually am closeted because I don't feel safe. No one ever asks for pronouns, none of these things. Then, you know, like it's not authentic. And those people, those employees are the ones who are going to let us know, right? That's not the truth. And when you work for a company who changes the logo and you are part of the community and you're like, oh yes, here they see me, they value me, but not because they changed the logo, but because the ERG is strong, they invest in us, they all these things, then it's like, okay, I'm happy that they do it and I'm proud to work for this company, right? So again, it's kind of companies that retain their talent and all the things we know that happen when these things are authentic and not just to check a box.
So if you have to come up with one, you know, got magic wand, what would you change? What would be your top priority for an organization to think about around gender equity? What's your thoughts?
if I had a magic wand, well, I think definitely there's a lot to do around still pay equity for everyone, not just white cisgender women, but actually, because if you see the numbers and differences between also white cisgender women, when they will get parity to black cisgender women or Latino cisgender women, the numbers are completely different. What about transgender women? What about transgender men? What about gender nonconforming people? So really, really parity and transparency of payment for everyone. Like it shouldn't be biased by any characteristic that is not basically talent and what you do at work, right? Productivity. And I think there's big opportunity also in just starting to gain the data, right? So I would suggest people the same that they started to work with gender, with women equity, I would do for all other genders, and starting to have this talk and invite conversation and people to have the actual conversations. I think sometimes it's just people are afraid, again, like we mentioned before, to make a mistake or to not say the correct thing. And I would just ask organizations to not be afraid to have those conversations, because by talking is the only way we will learn and make an advancement, right? If we decide that we need to be perfect before doing anything, we don't do anything, right? So it's better to just start and have those conversations and start the work, even if your company or you are not sure if your company has a gender non-conforming person on your staff or not.
That's a great bit of advice and great starting point if you're not there already. So thank you. Valentina, how do people get hold of you? It's been a fascinating conversation.
Yes, thank you, Joe. So people can get a hold of me on LinkedIn. They can find me with my name, Valentina, and my last name, Jaramillo, so all together. And so that's Jaramillo. And yeah, just on LinkedIn, that's the best place to find me.
Thank you. A fascinating conversation.
Thank you.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. If today's discussion struck a chord, consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.